Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Week's edition of Says You, Public Radio's venerable game with words, a verbal delight for the entire family, a mature, seamless presentation.
Where are the words?
The words are downstairs.
This is not helpful.
Well, this is an embarrassing moment. We left the words downstairs. I don't believe
Perhaps
it.
You can tell them when these shows will air.
Yeah!
You won't
ah!
Do that.
A useful moment.
A useful moment. You mean there's going to be completion?
A teaching moment.
Yes, a teaching moment. Everyone asks me that, and I really don't know when these shows will air. We promise that at least once tonight you'll say... What?
Any word that has only four letters in it is either Anglo-Saxon or a sandwich meat.
And then before you know it, it all starts to make sense somehow.
Chopping woodblock.
Woodblock line. Chopping woodblock line.
Says you. Next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. Former Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif is declaring victory in yesterday's general election in Pakistan. Despite a series of bombing attacks by Islamic fundamentalists, voter turnout was strong. The explosions killed at least 29 people and wounded dozens of others. Nine Turkish citizens believed to have ties with the Syrian intelligence agency are in custody after bomb attacks near the Syrian border yesterday. NPR's Peter Kenyon reports from Istanbul that Turkey is willing to take all necessary measures after the explosions killed 46 people.
The bombing seemed likely to further worsen relations between Ankara and Damascus. Foreign Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu said no one should test Turkey's power, adding that those who try to bring external chaos into the country will get a response. Turkish officials said the initial suspects in the explosions have ties to Syrian intelligence services, but offered no explanation. The UN, Washington, and NATO all condemned the bombings, as did the opposition Syrian National Coalition. The blasts come as Washington and Moscow attempt to revive diplomatic efforts to achieve a ceasefire in the Syrian conflict. Peter Kenyon, NPR News, Istanbul.
Rain has caused delays in recovery operations at the scene of a collapsed garment building in Bangladesh. Overnight rainstorms forced crews to suspend work for several hours. The death toll has reached nearly 1,100. Nine people have been arrested in connection with the disaster, which happened 18 days ago. Four UN peacekeepers being held by Syrian rebels are now free. As NPR's Jonathan Blakely reports from Beirut, the four Filipinos were captured last week.
The peacekeepers were detained on May 7th in the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights as fighting from the two-year-old uprising in neighboring Syria rages on. Syrian rebels from the Yarmouk Martyrs Brigade said the peacekeepers were being held for their own safety after clashes with Syrian government forces there. The same group held 21 peacekeepers in that area for 3 days last March. The Philippine Foreign Minister confirmed the release of the four this morning. A statement from the UN thanks the government of Qatar in securing their safe return. Qatar has ties with many of the rebel groups fighting against Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. A UN commander said the four appear to be unharmed. Jonathan Blakely, NPR News, Beirut.
Astronauts have replaced a pump outside of the International Space Station to fix an ammonia leak. NASA's spaceflight director, Ed Van Cise, says all of the pieces fell together to make Saturday's spacewalk a success.
A lot of the configurations that are required in order to go do a spacewalk were already in place, and with the crew that we had, they'd actually been out to this work site together on a previous shuttle mission, so a lot of things worked in our favor.
NASA says it will continue to monitor the system over the next several weeks. This is NPR News. The new Star Wars movie will return the franchise to its British roots. NPR's Allison Keyes reports it will be shot in England.
It's like a homecoming for the franchise, which told the story of the intrepid Luke Skywalker.
I want to learn the ways of the Force and become a Jedi like my father.
He did, as anyone who's seen the first six films can tell you. And episode 6 ended with... the destruction of the evil Death Star and victory for the forces of good. Now Lucasfilm says Star Wars Episode 7 will be filmed in England, where parts of all six of the other movies were shot. British Finance Minister George Osborne tweeted, "Great news for our creative industries. May the Force be with us." It'll be directed by J.J. Abrams. He's also the man who brought the reboot of the Star Trek franchise back to the big screen in recent years. Allison Keyes, NPR News.
Britain's Prince Harry and U.S. swimming superstar Missy Franklin helped kick off the Warrior Games at the U.S. Olympic Training Center yesterday. It marked the formal start of the U.S. military's Paralympic-style competition for wounded service members. Joint Chiefs of Staff Vice Chairman Admiral James Winnefield expressed his gratitude to the Prince and his colleagues.
A very warm and special welcome, Prince Harry, to your Royal Highness. We're so very honored to count you as another supporter of this very special event. And we're grateful that you've brought your fellow warriors from the United Kingdom to compete in these games.
The Prince, a veteran combat helicopter pilot, will next travel to New York to attend a charity fundraiser. I'm Windsor Johnston, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Pew Charitable Trusts, exploring how changes to federal spending and taxes affect the states. At pewtrusts.org.
MountainLodge.com. Spell out mountain, put an E on stove.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Scherr.
Great.
Thank you. From the Vermont shores of the Connecticut River, welcome to Bellows Falls, Vermont. And Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. He's hoping this trip to Bellows Falls won't sully his virginity. Tony Khan. He's a big fan of the Green Mountain Boys, especially that song Elvira. Barry Nolan. And she thinks that Vermont's ban on billboard advertising is sending just the right message. Miss Francine Akbar. Who's going to lead today?
The dreamy Barry Nolan.
Barry will be the captain. To my left, team two. She's as sweet as an early spring maple, which we hope doesn't sound too syrupy. Paula Lyons. When we said we'd be driving through gorges, she said, "Great, I love gorges drives." Carolyn Fay Fox. And he's a lot like the Connecticut River. Sometimes shallow, but real wide at the mouth. Mr. Arnie Raceman. Who's going to step up?
Miss Maple, the sweet and syrupy one. Miss Paula will lead.
Paula will be the captain. Correct answers are worth 10 points, or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners to grab a pen and paper. Let's begin with a round of definitions and derivations. For 5 points, define, and for an additional 5, try to divine the origins of the following common words and phrases. Carolyn, botched up.
Botched up. Ruined. Messed up.
Completely bungled.
Yes.
Managed as poorly as possible.
Yeah. That's right.
Where do you think this
really,
might come from?
Really fell down on
5 points for that.
Botch.
Well, I can think of a certain show we did.
Right. In Botch, Connecticut.
Can't we all?
In Botch Mountain.
Yeah.
Where did it come from? It's probably a euphemism.
It is not a euphemism,
okay.
No.
Botch. Would botch have something to do with a mechanical process?
I don't want to... No, I... don't go there because that's not going to give you the right answer.
Well, if it's not the right answer, I won't go there.
Yeah, that's right.
No.
Was it someone's name?
It absolutely was.
Ah. So it's like, you know, your name is Mud and fudging something. They're all names of people.
You
so
know what? I'm going to give you the 10 points because it's eponymous. It's actually...
A son of a botch.
Isn't eponymous awfully large?
It's like Seymour Botch who keeps falling over his feet or something?
Was he the guy that said, ignore the cannons on the left, ignore the cannons on the right? Go.
Volume
so who was Mr. or Mrs. or Miss?
Well, it turns out that the greatest structure built in Victoria, England, was the Tay Rail Bridge at Dundee in Scotland, nearly 2 miles long. At the time, it was the longest bridge in the world. But in 1879... horrifying weather forced a collapse that plunged a train and 75 souls to their rest. And 10 months later, the creator of the worst structural failure in history, Sir Thomas Bouch, died.
Bouch.
Sir Thomas Bouch, B-O-U-C-H. And from there, you got botched.
Botched.
Botch.
So wow. 10 points. Nice job for finding that out.
Wow.
Try this one. I'm sorry?
I just think Mr. Eiffel must have breathed a sigh of relief. That's
right.
Knowing it wasn't going to be him.
That's right.
Tony, try this one. Definition and derivation of armed to the teeth.
Armed to the teeth? Well, that means you couldn't possibly have more weaponry on you. You are, every possible square inch that could be exposed is covered by a weapon.
That's exactly right.
And that's the position I assume whenever I go to the dentist. I do not expose my teeth to this man. I sent enough of his children to college.
I understand.
Armed to the teeth.
Yes.
Well, now, does this have anything to do with the human anatomy, or does it have to do with maybe something like a position in the field?
No, it is human anatomy we're talking about.
When you're armed to the teeth, the helmet goes right about to the nose. You need something to cover the rest of your face. So, a pen. You
say
a pen
in case
you have to take notes during the battle.
If you have that image of somebody that has lots of stuff and they have a knife clenched between your teeth right there.
Yeah, that's it.
That's exactly it. 10 points. Very good.
Why isn't that no?
They've run out of hands.
Why don't they say I'm knife to the gums?
Yeah,
arm to the gums.
Do you have any idea about when this might have started this and about when?
It was 2 years before they invented pockets.
Yes.
What about, I remember from my early days as a movie viewer, the frogmen would often be armed with knives, and they would have to carry them in their teeth.
Fabulous guess. Completely wrong. By maybe 3 centuries, but
then
that's all right.
Tarzan comes to mind. We tried
it. It was pirates who would swing on ropes, and because they wanted to have their knife ready as soon as they landed on the other ship,
they put the
knife in their teeth, grabbed the rope with both hands, hung over their gut, and said, give me your money.
That's it.
Except for the poor pirate who grabbed his teeth by the hands.
Yeah.
And in the last minute just got totally
confused. Got confused, and that was... No, it is having as many weapons as possible. From 17th century Caribbean pirate slang, a well-equipped buccaneer would enter the fray carrying a single-shot pistol in one hand, a cutlass in the other, and for that little extra, the dagger in the teeth. That's where that comes from, armed to the teeth.
Right.
Very good, you guys. 10 points.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Arnie, definition and derivation of can't hold a candle to.
Can't hold a candle to means you're inferior. You're just not in the same ballpark or league with the person or issue being discussed.
Exactly. To have less skill or capability than another person.
And I assume it has something to do with the fact that the candle will blow out?
No, actually. It's not that.
Okay. It's the illumination process?
Yes, it is.
So you're in a better light than the other person.
You're so close. You're getting there because you know it's.
Help me, gang.
It's literally.
It has to do with candling eggs.
Candling eggs.
Candling.
Oh, candling eggs.
eggs.
No, it does not. What
no.
a great
All
guess.
All right, then.
Candling eggs.
Yes.
No, no.
It does not. Arnie, you're pretty close to it, though. You're definitely...
So if you can't hold a candle to it, maybe it's like even if you did hold a candle to this
It still
person,
would not show
still,
the light.
Still wouldn't bask in the
you
light like someone smarter than
you'd
he or
You'd be casting
she.
A shadow. Well...
Yeah, I will have to say that this comes from 1600s Britain, and the phrase has undergone almost a reversal in meaning over the last 400 years. But, Arnie, you were very close. 8 points. Anybody want to contribute over here?
Is that when somebody in the days before electric lights came knocking at
lantern.
Your door? You would to see who they are, you needed to put the candle or lantern
not
to ID them?
Anybody in the audience?
Anything with a religious significance?
No.
You know, not illuminating a saint or...
No. Anyone in the audience want to take a shot at it? Well, sort of. It means, of course, to have less skill or capability. Mm-hmm. It often takes two guys to do a job. One to actually do it, and the other to hold the light.
Hold the light.
No. Okay? The guy with the light is usually the less skillful or experienced and shouldn't tie up the hands of the craftsman. And somehow, over the years, it kind of got backwards, but that's where it comes from.
How many candle holders does it take?
Yeah,
exactly.
Change the light bulb.
And why do you have one in your teeth?
Change a flashlight. Right.
Yes. But we'll give you, what did we say, 8 points for that?
That's what you said.
Yeah, because he got to the illumination. Very good. Try this one, Francine. Definition and been waiting for weeks to ask you this question, I have to tell you. Definition and derivation of bust one's chops.
Well.
Three Stooges.
Means to give someone a hard time.
Yes, it certainly does.
And does it imply to... punch them in the jaw.
Yes, it does.
Choppers.
Do you know why?
If they can do choppers, the
not
teeth?
Choppers, no. Oh, you're so close.
Yeah.
Chompers.
Yeah. No.
Lamb
the
chops.
Other side does know.
Yeah.
Seems to be a very graphic chops. Demonstration
yes.
over there.
Bust your chops.
Bust your chops.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. This is about
chopsticks.
Punch to the jaw.
While eating with chopsticks?
No. This is about a jaw bone.
You're so close. You've got
Or is
the
it about broken teeth?
It is not.
No. Mm-hmm. Does it come from boxing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's there is a slang reference in boxing, but no, that's not the... It's the chops that we're referring to that means...
Is... Okay, it's not another term for cheeks. Is
no,
it, based on some animal guess. Analogy.
I'm going to give you the 8 points.
Oh, pick us.
And I'm going to go. You know, I was going to go to the other side, but now I'm having second thoughts.
Take it, little lamb.
Mutton chops.
There you go.
Mutton chops. The sideburns that were called mutton chops that were very popular in early 1900s America. A bust in the chops was a blow to the side of the jaw. That's what it was. So that's where... we got an ooh from there. What do you know? All right. Try this one, Paula. Definition and derivation of don't count your chickens before they're hatched.
Oh, brother.
Yeah.
Well, since in my family growing up, every time someone brought those little chicks into the house, we tormented them to death. Don't count your chickens before they're hatched means don't anticipate before you have all the facts or before you are more certain of an outcome. Don't just trust your first impression.
Don't think you just got money.
Don't anticipate reward until actually achieved. Yes.
Right. So don't count your chickens until they're hatched. I'm sure that there were a certain number of them that never hatched, and therefore you couldn't count on so many live chickens from...
That might be true, but
or if
this,
they
comes,
hatch,
this comes from a specific origin, a very specific
Is
origin.
Is it a specific chicken?
No.
Would it be Aesop's Fables?
It would exactly be Aesop's Fables. Ooh. Do you remember the fable?
No. I think there's a girl who goes to market, and she buys eggs, but she thinks of them as chickens, or she's selling them as chickens. There's some sort of confusion in her mind where she is predicating her return on the fact that these are going to be chickens, yet they are merely eggs.
Eggs.
That's 10 points. Very good. Very good, Carol. Nice job.
Woo, thank you.
Good job.
It's from the fable. Does anyone here know
it's
the fable?
It's an old yoke. I believe it's
That's
an old
Carolyn
Greek
line.
Thank you.
It means a lot to me. And my
it
family.
Does. Yeah. It is from the fable of the milkmaid and the pail. With walking home with a pail of milk on her head, she begins to daydream about making her fortune by selling the butter and cream she could make from the milk, buying eggs, raising chickens, and selling them and buying new clothes to impress her former boyfriends. But as she walks home and thinks about this, she idly dismisses those imaginary boyfriends with a toss of her curls, and the milk falls off her head. So don't count your chickens.
I often wondered after he did his fables why no one ever again was named Aesop. Perfectly good name. It just...
And finally, Barry, definition and derivation of dressed to a T.
Dressed to a T means finely dressed, well turned out. You look nice enough to come to the Opera House here on a nice Sunday here in
Absolutely.
Bellows Falls. And dressed to a T, the T would be, Francine, you would know this.
A high T? a high T?
Dressed for high T.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Dressed for high T is exactly right. Extremely well turned out, as one should be when they attend high T. Let's go on to round two. It's played with a little musical help from our friends, the Crunchy Western Boys. It is the first of the Says You Bluffing Rounds. Paula, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The others have cards that say, please bluff. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Barry's team. 10 points up for grabs to Barry if he can find the bluffer, or to Paula if he can't. Take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word blet. B-L-E-T. Blet. Gentlemen?
We got in this thing together, drove that baby hard, and we had some decent highway for a while. Yeah, but don't that road get rocky. Don't that road get rough, a little damage done with every mile. We made mountain passes, sped from shore to shore, burned every kind of bridge we could burn. Forget about it, baby, you ain't done nothing wrong. It's just time for this wheel to turn.
Just a quick reminder, Says You heads to Port Townsend, Washington, Friday evening, June 21st, for a Community Says You to support the Clemente Course for the Humanities. Join Says You team captains and local denizens for an evening of wit and wordplay. Tickets, information, and details available, of course, at saysyou.net, where if you follow that Join the Fun link, we'll show you how to join the fun. And should you wish to join the greats, John Henderson of Lodi, New York, David Zobel of Los Angeles, or Michael Kramer of Guilford, Vermont, contribute a question to Says You, because frankly, Phil and I are hitting a dry spell. Says You returns after this from home.
Mama, you ain't done nothing wrong. It's just time for this wheel to turn.
The dilemma, what to get the folks as Mother's Day and Father's Day fast draw nigh. The answer, Says Us, the scripts and quips of Says You. 2 volumes, our first 2 seasons, 40 full shows. A gift so versatile, you can play together in the car on the way over, wrap it in the rest stop, and presto, instant thoughtfulness. You can find out more at SaysYou.net. That's SaysYou.
It's time for this wheel to turn, because everybody knows hanging on out of habit is what wrecks it. I know you ride it, gonna miss me when I'm gone, but I believe we finally come to my exit. So goodbye, my backseat lover, shotgun rider girl. It's been too long on one stretch of battle road. It's time to change direction, give another route of world before this hero wreck needs to be towed. Accelerate to the corners, gun it up the straight, learn every little trick that you can learn. And forget about me, mama, you ain't done nothing wrong, it's just time for this wheel to turn. Forget about it, baby, you ain't done nothing wrong, it's just time for this wheel to turn.
That is the Crunchy Western Boys. That's Jim McHugh, Steve McBrien, Jacob Stern, and Morris Manning. Thank you very much, John. For giving us a little time with the word blet.
Blet.
We will go first to Carolyn Fay Fox.
Blet. To divine the future by examining a spider web. You blet your life.
Love it.
We know that's why you're here.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Is there a gastroenterologist in the house?
Didn't you just hear him?
To divine the future with a spider web is to blet.
I like it.
You know, it could be, actually. Yeah. Or it could be something else. Arnie, what say you?
Well, it must be some kind of regionalism for bleh.
Ah.
Because it's basically the yuck spot in a piece of fruit. It's the mushy part, that the piece of decay in a piece of fruit that's been sitting around too long.
Oh, the mushy part of a fruit.
It's the bleh on the fruit.
The bleh on the fruit. Don't eat that apple.
Wait,
let me
remove the blet.
All right. Could be that.
You could cook with it and make apple brown bletty.
Boy, a mixed reaction to that. What do you know?
I think we've done a really good job of lowering their standards.
Absolutely. Try blet policy if you can come up with something better.
Well, it is pretty disgusting. I mean, blet is actually the residue that's left after you clean up vomit. So it's before the Lysol.
Clean up what?
Vomit.
Oh, vomit.
Right.
Wouldn't that be blarf?
I don't know. We never know what these words are. Steve. Let's be honest.
The hurlette.
Yeah. The Ralphette.
So, yes, yeah, right. Ralphina.
Yeah. Ralph residue is where we're going with this.
Right?
In lieu of spew.
In lieu of spew. Right. There's a book in here somewhere.
I know. I really. We're talking about what's left. I know. You know what
you
we're
wanna,
talking
yeah,
about.
Right.
We're...
And the end of the Technicolor yawn.
Yes, the calling Earl on the big white phone.
Yeah,
remember that one?
There we go. Yep.
Okay. All right, it's the residue that we're just finished discussing, as far as I'm concerned. It could be that. It could be the mushy part of the fruit, or it could be to divine the future with spider webs. It's one of those three, believe it or not. And the choice is yours, Barry.
Well, I'm just trying to think of how these would work using them in real life. I can't help but think that people would more easily say, I think you missed a little vomit. I imagine walking through Salem near Halloween and seeing all the signs that say tarot card readings and psychic and witches spells cast and coming to the window that says blet. Doesn't seem like it would work, so I go with Arnie and the yucky fruit spot.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think okra is all blet. It's, you know, based on the theory that any word that has only four letters in it is either Anglo-Saxon or a sandwich meat. I think blet is yeah, right.
Okay.
Let's go for the bruised fruit.
We go for yucky spot and fruit, courtesy of Arnie.
Arnie, it is unanimous on this side. They all think that blet is just a yucky part of fruit. Is that, in fact, what it is?
Well, unfortunately, they are right.
They are right. Wow. The definition actually reads?
Softness or decay in overripe fruit.
Let's go on to round three. Middle fiddling.
Who?
I'm going to give you two words. A common two-word phrase can be placed between those words to form a four-word chain. For example,
right. Zirkle and Flomlight.
Yes, that's right. For example, if I gave you the words ski and game, you could make that ski, jump, jump ball, ball, game.
Jump ball.
And
ball,
put the phrase jump
okay.
ball in between.
I see.
Okay.
So do you get where we're going here?
No. Barely.
I didn't think so.
Barely.
Could you ask me that one?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
So let's try this one. Carolyn.
All right.
What two-word phrase could you put between these words to get a four-word chain? Chopping, line.
Chopping, C-H?
C-H-O-P-P-I-N-G, and line.
Okay, block, chopping block.
Wood block.
Tackle.
Chopping, block, tackle, and tackle line.
What's a tackle line?
Something in football.
Chopping wood block line.
What's block line?
I don't know. I was going with what she had.
No.
Oh.
Chopping
no, it is no
block. Block is correct.
Okay. Block. Chopping block.
I think the other side may have it.
Samba line.
Yes, one I didn't have, actually.
You block your hair?
How about
no.
How about conga?
Conga line, yeah. Conga.
Block conga. Block.
I think we're played out. We'll go to the other side. What do you have, other side?
Chopping, block, block out, out line.
I would accept
block
that.
Out.
I would accept that, but that's not what I had. Audience? Block party.
Block party.
Chopping, block, block party. All right, audience.
10 points to the audience.
10 points for the audience, of course.
You know, you all could do Let's Make a Deal. That was good.
They also had blockhead.
Oh,
and
right. That was good.
Very good, you guys.
Good.
So we missed out on 3 inches.
Well, yes.
Let's just sit up here.
3 inches. Three.
Do or die.
All right, try this one, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
What two-word phrase could be put between these words to make a four-word chain? Hopping, tired. H-O-P-P-I-N-G and tired. T-I-R-E-D.
Hopping something dead tired.
Hopping mad.
Hopping mad.
Mm-hmm.
Mad dog and dog tired.
Dog tired, yeah.
It's exactly right. 10 points.
Thank you, Barry.
I think we may have found their category over here. We'll have to see how it goes. All right. Try this one, Arnie. What two-word phrase could go between the words off, O-F-F, and mice, M-I-C-E?
Wow. Offline?
No.
Offline,
Off.
We want blind mice, maybe, huh? At the end, what do you think?
Blind is right.
Blind is right. So
blind.
Offline?
Off,
Venetian.
Off Venetian?
Off Venetian.
Offline, off.
Off.
off your rocker.
Offhand. Offhand. Hand blind.
The other side.
Off.
It does have it.
Off.
Yes.
We should give them 5 points because they got the first part of it last time, Ben.
Okay.
So give Paula's team 5 points.
No, we're going to get five again.
And you get five because you got blind here.
Off
but
spot, off,
I think we're going to have to put an end to this.
It.
Give them 5 points
can't
for blind and go to the other side.
Boy.
Off color, color
oh,
blind,
color.
Blind
color
Mike.
Blind.
There you go.
I could have had a V8.
Boy, you're not getting this
at all. All right, then we're going to give you the hard one.
This great.
This is the hard one. What two-word phrase... Francine could go between the words absolute and blank. B-L-A-N-K.
Us.
Absolute blank.
Absolute zero.
Arnie's team. Paula's team, I mean.
Absolute zero.
No, not zero.
No.
Absolute vodka.
Absolute vodka.
Sounds absolute vodka?
No.
No.
Absolute.
Absolute.
Absolute zero. Absolute.
Nonsense.
Pressure.
Nonsense?
Absolute. No.
Absolute. Oh, you know what? How about this?
Absolute. What?
Yes.
Oh.
Two-word
yes.
phrase.
Does the
and
other
I,
side
yes.
have it?
Well, I got something. I don't know.
Got
if it's,
it.
The other side always gets it. This is
blank.
Amazing.
Well,
absolute.
Yes. Yes.
At the
yes.
end of this, we
you might
want
to work with.
On.
We're figuring
with
it out
blank.
At last.
Blank. Draw. No. Drawing a blank.
Yes, that's true.
Blank. Yeah. Here we
you got it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Any idea for something blank?
Yeah.
Boy, I think they get nothing for this one. We go to the other side.
How about absolute power point blank?
That's where you're going.
All right.
Absolute power
point blank.
Power point point blank. All right.
That was a great one.
Let's see if you've learned anything from all of that. Paula, what two-word phrase could go between the words poison and top? T-O-P.
Blet.
Pill.
And
blet. Blet could go
pill
there.
Pill and ow. That way you have pillow top.
Poison pen.
Is it pen?
No.
Poison
it
pill.
Pen.
It is.
Poison, it is pill.
Poison pill.
Poison pill box.
Oh. Box.
Pill,
box
box
top.
Box
top. Yes.
Yeah.
Box tap is right. We would have also accepted bottle. But very good.
Bottle top. Yeah.
That's 10 points for that. And finally, Barry, the hardest one of them all. What two-word phrase would go between horror and pupil?
Horror.
H-O-R-R-O-R, as they say in Pennsylvania.
Horror show?
Ooh, not show.
Horror movie.
Horror film.
Movie star.
Movie star is exactly right. Very good.
Now we get it.
Wow, we got that one.
Which gives you horror movie, movie star, star pupil. So very good, you guys. You picked up a lot of speed on that one. And thanks for playing that round of Middle Fiddlin'. I'm sure we'll revisit that again sometime.
Oh, I'm sure we will.
Ooh, was that a groan that we heard in the audience? Let's go on to round four, which is Barry's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word. Two will bluff. 10 points, Paula, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few moments to create a definition for the word dole.
Dole?
D-O-L. Dole.
Dolor.
Gentlemen?
Dolor.
Two cars that won't start. Dead in the driveway. Looking for the right parts. Send us on our way. Call up the click and clack. Call up the AAA. Two cars that won't start. Dead in the driveway. I was down at the AA meeting, trying to get my license back, when up pulls certain trouble in a beat up Cadillac. She said, I swear I've seen you somewhere. So sweetie, tell me what you think. We could broaden your horizons. You could buy this girl a drink. Two cars that won't start. Dead in the driveway. Looking for the right parts to to send us on our way. Call up the click and clack. Call up the AAA. Two cars that won't start. Dead in the driveway.
Says You says thanks to Vermont Public Radio for your help and support in Bellows Falls, to Tim Cullinan and Chip Stearns and the staff at the Bellows Falls Opera House, and to the Stowe Mountain Lodge for letting us close down the mountain this weekend and giving us a weekend of fireplaces and fun. You can see where we stayed at StoweMountainLodge.com. Don't forget to spell out mountain and put an E on Stowe.
It started with a shimmy.
Briefly, Says You pauses. We'll be right back. So many ways to enjoy, Says You. You can listen here each week, as we hope you do. You can attend the live performance or download any show in our archive. You can contribute a question to the show and achieve limited fame with a small but dedicated audience. And now there's the book, Says Us, Volumes 1 and 2, a tome of games for family and fellow travelers. All this and more at SaysYou.net. SaysYou.
First we overheated, then we lost our brakes. Some folk like a new car, some folk like unused. Some like bright and shiny, some slightly abused. Two cars that won't start. On our way, call up the click and clack, call up the AAA. Two cars that won't start, dead in the driveway. Two cars that won't start, dead in the driveway.
That is the Country Western Boys. Thank you very much, guys. We have had a few moments with the word dole. We will go first to Tony Khan.
It's actually D-O-L, and it's one of those little abbreviations that people my age use in emails. It means dependent on Lipitor.
Probably does.
Yeah. Or living on Lipitor, L-O-L, which is another... it actually is a delicacy, which usually means disgusting in, if it's not your particular culture. But like the Mexican huitlacoche, which is a fungus on corn, this is a fungus on wheat.
A fungus on wheat.
Yes.
Wheat fungus.
Wheat fungus.
Is dole?
Yes.
Could be. Or it could be something else. Francine, what's your take?
Dole is a shiny mineral, quite valueless, rather like schist, found in, not surprisingly, the Dolomites.
A shiny mineral?
I'm puzzled by the reaction of the audience. I don't.
They're ahead of you.
I guess. Found in the Dolomites, you get this shiny material that's worth just about nothing. Could be that, or it could be something else. What say you, Barry?
Dole is faintly painful.
Faintly who?
Painful.
Painful.
A dole is the smallest unit measurable of pain. Actually, you should recall it because Japanese NPR reviewed Richard's original pilot for this show, and in their haiku review said, in their show, the small weights seem great till droll becomes dull. Remember that?
Oh, my God.
Put that one up on the website, I think. A small unit of pain is a dull. Could be that. It could be that shiny mineral that the audience seems to find amusing. Or it could be the wheat fungus we heard about, you know, several minutes ago. It's one of those three, and the choice, Paula, is yours.
Yippee.
Yippee.
Well, here's the thing that I'm now struggling with.
Yes.
As both Tony and I know well, dolor in Spanish means pain. So is it as obvious as all that dole is faintly painful? Or is the brilliant Mensa-driven Barry Nolan also knowledgeable about the root word and just making it up as he goes? Do we think it's a fungus on wheat? A shiny mineral like schist, which is from your neck of the woods, right?
Canada.
Isn't that from, no, schist is from Pennsylvania, right? Isn't that what all those lovely
I think you can find schist just about anywhere.
Yeah. I see. Okie doke.
This country is full of schist.
So believe me.
What did you make me do that for?
Yeah. I like Carolyn's definition.
Okay, though. I thought a dole was 3/4 of a pineapple.
Well, shall we pick the ones we like? Or
how about an American Idol winner who lacks ego?
The smallest unit of pain.
Yeah, like smallest unit of pain is looking much better than
wheat. All right. Let's
or
just
anything
go
found
with
in the...
let's go with the obvious and hope we're right. We think it's Barry.
Or it's dying out loud.
Dying out loud.
Barry, they have come to the conclusion that dole is a small unit of pain. Is that in fact what it is?
And I'm feeling it because it's the basic smallest unit for measuring pain equal to the faint sensation of heat rays applied to the skin.
Oh, my goodness.
That's what it is. 10 points, Donna. I tried to go obvious because I figured you'd never go for the obvious. But no.
No. Well.
It crushed me up once again. Let's close tonight with a round of famous pairs. I'm going to give you the first half of a famous pair of...
Boscanon-Jew.
Right.
Boscanon-Jew.
How could you not?
Boscanon-Jew. Yeah. And you're pretty much played out there, aren't you?
Oh, well, I've got a Bartlett waiting. I'm waiting for him to come up with a good quote.
Yeah. Where were we? Oh, yes.
I don't
right.
remember anything.
Famous pairs. I forgot all about that. That's spelled with an I, just in, you know,
okay.
To clear that up. I'm going to give you the first half of a famous pair of people, places, or things. For 7 points, please give me the other half of that pairing. And for an additional 3, why are they together? Try this one, Carolyn. What pairs with Phobos? P-H-O-B-O-S. Phobos.
What? Phobos and team? Oh. Phobos and Realbos.
I'm telling you, I've never heard of that in my life.
Phobos. P-H-O-B-O-S.
Phobos?
Yes, Phobos.
The other side got this.
Is Phobos a cartoon character?
It is. Well, it might be, but it's not what we have in mind here.
No.
Is Phobos a cartoon character? Not that we know of. Not that anyone knows.
You know, in ancient Greece?
A cartoon character in ancient Greece, maybe. The other side
Porthos,
does...
Athos, Phobos, and D'Artagnan.
Yeah. No. I don't think they're going to know this, so we'll go to the other side.
Is Phobos a moon of a planetary moon?
It is a planetary moon.
Mars?
It is.
And the other one is? Audience?
Phobos and...
Deimos.
Oh, boy.
D-E-I-M-O-S. Deimos, the other moon of Mars.
Isn't it also the word for Apollo? The
That's Phoebus, isn't it? P-H-O-E-B.
Science and us.
It's Phoebus Apollo, right? It's like, that goes back away. I'm processing. All right, try this one, Tony. What pairs with parry? P-A-R-R-Y.
Parry. You know, in a sword play, to something and parry.
Thrust.
Thrust and parry.
Thrust and parry. We would have also taken parry and lunge. Lunge and parry. Parry and thrust.
En garde and en brochette.
Yes, that's right. That's true. All right. Arnie, try this one. What pairs with Lilliput?
Lilliput?
Yes.
Oh, Brobdingnag?
From, of course?
Gulliver's Travels.
10 points. Nice job. Very good. They are, of course, the...
Lilliput's the little people, Brobdingnag's big people.
And hence paired.
Yeah.
There they go. All right, here's a tough one for you, Francine. Mumtaz Mahal. M-U-M-T-A-Z Mahal. M-A-H-A-L.
Taj.
Well, that's what we're dealing
Mumtaz
with.
Mumtaz was her name.
Yes,
Mumtaz Mahal.
Yes, was the woman for whom the Taj Mahal was...
Oh, and there's a smaller one,
the
right?
The man who loved her that built
it. Yes. Kind
of, Skippy.
Skippy Mama.
It's Mumtaz.
No, Skippy Malou.
Skippy Malou.
You were just there. Do you remember the town it's in?
Agra.
It's in Agra, I know.
Agra, so...
Raj.
Well, you're going to get some points because you know where it's... You know what the pairing is. Can you remember the name? You also remembered that it was a Shah, so that's good. Other side, do you know?
No.
Shah Mahal.
No? Audience? That's exactly right.
What?
Shah Jahan.
Jahan.
I don't know if it's pronounced Jahan. Is it Jahan? Yes.
Yeah.
Give them 5 points, Ben. They knew it was from The Legend of the Taj Mahal, so they get that. All right, Paula. This is nothing if not mean-spirited.
Oh,
well,
wonderful.
You know, this is very embarrassing, Richard. I mean, these NPR listeners are wicked smart here.
Yeah? Let's see how smart they are with this one.
Well, it's me I'm worried about.
Who or what might you pair with Ann Darrow, D-A-R-R-O-W?
Ooh.
And don't worry, I got a hard one for them, too.
Ann Darrow. So it's not Ann Morrow Lindbergh, we know that.
It's
Ann
not
Darrow.
Clarence's wife.
Huh? It is not.
Ann Darrow.
Ann Darrow.
Can we have a hint? This is...
Is she a real person or a character
this
in literature?
This is a character in a movie. I will give you this hint because this is...
Character in a movie.
And is she paired with a man or a woman?
Ann Darrow.
I guarantee you have seen Ann Darrow.
I guarantee
this
you're
fairly
probably
fairly
right.
Iconic.
Yeah, wait a minute. This is a character's name, not a real person.
This is a character's name.
Character's name in a movie. Was she in the Philadelphia Story?
She was
no,
not.
No.
Was this a black and white movie?
It is.
That'll really narrow it down.
Yep.
I'll give you that hint, too. Don't say it out loud, audience.
Was it in The Maltese Falcon?
No.
No. You know all that by heart, right?
Yeah. He knows Effie Perrine. Are you kidding?
Yeah,
oh, he
I got
does.
That.
Yeah. Ann Darrow.
This
is it
just,
in a detective movie?
This is like some ancillary character down the...
Oh, no, it isn't.
Is it a film noir detective movie?
Nothing like that. Don't say it out loud. Does the
and
other
it's
side...
And it's not in Gone with the Wind or something obvious like that.
Don't say it out loud. Does anyone in the audience know? Two people in an audience of several hundred people know this.
Ann Darrow. Can you give us a sign?
And they're sitting together. What were the odds?
Yeah.
I mean a hint sign.
All right.
Anything else besides a black and white movie?
No, this is just a mean-spirited thing. Who was it?
King Kong.
Is exactly right.
Oh, my God. We'd be here a while.
She must have been the speaker in King Kong.
Wow.
Played by Faye.
I don't know how you got that, but you guys got to get out more. You really... gotta spend more.
Are you Googling?
Yeah. This is the creature in his hand.
Yes.
Right?
No, it's King Kong's real name.
Was it King Kong's real name?
You know, I had the great pleasure of meeting Fay Wray, who played that, and...
You met Fay Wray?
I met Fay Wray.
How old are you?
She said that she had written a biography, or an autobiography. You know what the title for it was?
What?
On the Other Hand.
On the Other Hand.
Oh.
Isn't that great?
You really met Fay?
Yes, I did.
I don't think I've ever been more impressed by anything in my life.
Doesn't take much, does it?
Very, very lovely lady, and as you can imagine, very bright. And a little frustrated,
and old.
You know, as being known for only that, yeah.
And here is, and in order to make this just equal, because that was horribly difficult, try this one, Barry. This one is also monstrously hard. I'm going to give you the famous pair.
Oh.
You tell me where I might find them. Where might I find patience and fortitude?
Patience and fortitude?
In every man.
You know, I never really thought about it. I hope it isn't in every man.
Pilgrim's Progress.
No.
I don't think so.
No.
Patience and fortitude.
Yeah. I gave them a horrible one, so I had to give
them. They are towns in northern Vermont.
Yeah.
I have no idea, but I'll tell you one thing. I wouldn't be living in Patience.
They wouldn't have you.
Yeah.
Are these race horses in the Bible?
They are not race horses. No. They're not in the Bibles. In the Bibles?
In the Bible.
None of the Bibles. They're in none of the Bibles.
No. There are two.
They are, in fact, statues.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you know what they are on the other side?
No, my guess was just that they were statues in some building or monument someplace.
They sure are.
On the Capitol.
No. I think they got
the lions
it.
At the public library?
They are the lions. In fact, at the New York Public Library, yeah. Out in front, Patience and Fortitude. That's we could give them some points for that, but there was a lot of audience help, yeah. And to this week they didn't need them. 10-point victors this week with 73 points. Barry Nolan's team. Congratulations. Nice job. This audience is nice job, audience, I gotta say. That is all we have time for this week. Thanks so much to the good folks of Bellows Falls and Rockingham. Major thanks to Sarah Laurie and Michael Broderick at the Stone Mountain Lodge for the fabulous weekend experience we all had. And thanks so much to Ty Robertson, Robin Turnow, and everybody from Vermont Public Radio. Sharon Salkind write the words. Antonio Oliart mans the meters. And Zach Moore is the AP with the get up and go. So long today from Vermont, where it's hard to buy liquor, hard to find a Walmart, hard to drive across state. But if it's cheese and maple syrup that strikes your fancy, this is one sweet place to be. Thanks for the hospitality, Bellows Falls. See you all next week.
You can hear Says You Again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at saysyou.net. Benjamin, give them the skinny.
Says You, created and produced by Pippin and Finch, Boston.
Support for WPLN comes from the Country Music Hall of Fame and Museum, presenting Poets and Prophets, saluting songwriter Tom Douglas, award-winning composer of The House That Built Me, May 18th at 1:30 p.m., countrymusichalloffame.org.
This is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 10 o'clock.